Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Friday, 23 September. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Wayne McCurry, rate increases all over the place. We will touch on those and how far are we going to end up going. Keith McLachlan from Integral Asset Management, investing into music via song catalogs. This goes back to David Bowie in the 90s, but changed quite markedly these days. And then some thoughts for me, dividends, the good, the bad, and the tax. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. The Fashini Group launches a mobile network. It's the fourth retailer to get into this MVNO. I got to say, I mean, I don't see massive margins there, but I suppose if you've got a base and if you can get enough numbers, small margins work, right? Business day, it works to start on three new wind farms. French company EDF Renewables has signed with Eskom. 420 megawatts. That's not even half a stage. Going to cost $11 billion and take 2 years. This is not a quick solution. Morning markets. US was red. S&P down 0.8 and NASDAQ down 1.2%. Across in Asia, Sydney is off 1.9% and Tokyo is closed for autumn equinox. Commodities mostly red. We've got gold, 1,679. That's your green for the morning. Brent is $89.99 a barrel. Platinum, $894. And palladium, 2,148. Rand, a little stronger, 1761. Bitcoin, 19,400. Top 40 opening call, 300 points to the red. That's 0.5% down as Tencent trades down 2.3% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investment. Wayne, appreciate the early morning. We had the Fed on Wednesday evening. We had BOE yesterday afternoon. And then, of course, our own SARB yesterday afternoon as well, all raising rates. 75 points for the SARB wasn't a surprise. Takes us back to pre-pandemic levels. My sense is they're probably still going higher, though.
Yes, I think so as well. But I mean, understand what the world's experiencing now with inflation is as abnormal as what we experienced in the prior 10 years when we had very low and very low inflation and very low interest rates. This is very, very unusual, and it will fall dramatically in the second half of next year. So we just got to survive until then, and then we'll get interest rate cuts again. I mean, this is almost, you know, it's the war, it's supply chain, it's a whole range of things, but they are all unusual. So inflation will come down. We mustn't think we're going to a period of super high inflation, but we are going back to a period of normal inflation.
Yeah, and normal, as opposed to, as you said, what we've had incredibly low. And that falling of inflation, I mean, it's base effect. We always say the best solution for inflation is inflation, because the base works its way out. And of course, high rates do work. I mean, economic theory.
Yeah. And it's every Reserve Bank governor has, other than Turkey, every Reserve Bank governor has said inflation is enemy number one and we will kill it, irrespective of the cost to the economy.
Is our Reserve Bank going to do more increases? They had stated before inflation came along, they wanted to get back to pre-pandemic. They're there, but a little bit more, maybe as much as 10.5 for price.
Yes, very much so. Now that is coming simply because inflation is much higher than what it was pre-pandemic in South Africa and obviously worldwide, significantly higher. So, you know, you've got to make a statement essentially, and you've got to force prices down. But more correctly, you've got to force consumption down to get prices down.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, upping interest rates doesn't change the food price or the oil price. But if you can't change those, you've got to suppress the parts you can control with interest rates to get demand down and pull prices down.
Yeah, may have the impact you can. And of course, expectations, always a huge part of inflation.
Yes.
Moving to the market, we had RMI results yesterday. Essentially, that's now outsurance. And RMI will sort of become outsurance towards the end of the year. A nice addition to our stock market.
Yes, it is. I must say, it's very nice to see a company come onto the stock market. I mean, it was always listed as part of RMI, but it was so small in the bigger scheme when Discovery and Momentum Metropolitan was still part of the RMI portfolio. So it's nice to have it. And I mean, OUTsurance is a fantastic company. In fact, all short-term insurers, I think, are fantastic companies because they can reprice their premiums whenever they strike a disaster, and they can reprice in a year, whereas other people can't reprice because they're, you know, like certainly life, anyone who underwrites risks like a life insurer, you know, it takes you a long time to reprice, but a short term you can reprice very, very quickly. So it's actually a nice business.
Yeah, actually, I was watching the presentation yesterday. I'm chatting with Martinez Fisser on Monday, and that was what came through. I mean, they have that ability to reprice. And he said in some cases they were early to it, and it loses you a bit of market share, but it's about managing that.
But everyone reprices eventually.
Yeah, eventually you have to, because that risk has changed. Blue Label recapitalizing Cell C. I mean, there was a time when Blue Label was a high flyer. There was a time when Cell C had real potential. My sense is those times have passed. I mean, I don't know if they
they're no longer
significant in our market, really.
No, they're not. And unfortunately, Blue Label, I bet they regret the day they got involved with Cell C.
Yeah.
Because that was truly a good business. And Cell C and Telkom, you just haven't got the capital to compete against the big players. That's it. That's just it.
Yeah, no, to that point, and I agree. I bet the Levy brothers are deeply regretting the day they found Blue Label, found Cell C rather. We'll leave it there. Wayne McCurry, Senior Portfolio Manager, F&B Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today. Chatting there about the SARB raising rates. Prime now at 9.75%. That is back where it was in January 2020. But what do you think they'll do? Are they going to push it higher? Wayne says absolutely. I think 10.5. I think maybe another 50 points later this year at the next meeting, and then early next year a 0.25% takes us to 10.5. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan, Integral Asset Management. A bit of background. David Bowie, I think we can all agree that the greatest musician of all time. And for those who don't agree, you can go hit me up on Twitter. But he released the Bowie bond in 1997. Essentially, he raised $55 million and investors got the income from his 25 albums that had been produced up to that point. It was a 10-year bond and it went pear-shaped. Later, he sued Prudential Insurance, the original backers, in 2001 for breach of contract and unjust enrichment. He lost. He had a Moody's rating. It got downgraded to junk status in March 2004. But he's, well, in a back sense, his estate has now sold his catalog for $250 million. Keith, this is something which, when Bowie did it in the 90s, was weird and wonderful. But the idea of selling musicians' music catalogs has gathering steam, and in fact, is investable these days?
Morning, Simon. Absolutely. I mean, in a world of increasing financial sophistication and increasing access to financial markets and instruments, song catalogs, and by the way, the term, just for the listeners' benefit, when we talk about catalogs, they are collections of songs. Mm. They don't necessarily have to be the same artist. They can be vast numbers of artists and individual songs and entire albums, et cetera, et cetera. But investing in catalogs, especially in a world of declining interest rates like we had for the last decade, a couple of years ago, it becomes very attractive because you get to, like, there's been some really good tailwinds in this market and it generates a nice yield.
Yeah, it does generate that yield because, my thought was, I mean, in a sense, they're pandemic proof because during the pandemic, we were all stuck at home and probably streaming more music. And to a degree, again, recession proof because we are spending and they should in an ideal world be fairly nice, fairly unvolatile investment options.
So I wouldn't call them proof anything. What I call them is uncorrelated.
There we go.
Uncorrelated. Important from a portfolio construction perspective. where it's not going to follow necessarily the more normal market cycles. And I go back to that point of right up until a little while ago, we had a decade or two of declining interest rates. So the world was seeking alternative yield. This became very attractive. Each time global interest rates fall further, the steady yield coming out of catalog royalties becomes more attractive. But there's more subtle elements to this as well. Mm-hmm. The industry is somewhat still a growth industry for a range of reasons. And I just want to touch on those. And that's some of the structural reasons that make this attractive. The first one is that for many, many years, there was a long tail of royalties in the market that didn't get collected. You know, you download an MP3 and you play it, and the artist and the owner of the song, those can sometimes be different one people, don't get paid anything. So that effectively the black market in songs was huge. What's happened with the advent of streaming, Spotify and iTunes, it's actually not just made it easier to listen to songs, because the owners of catalogs are dealing with large corporates, mm-hmm. and it's data rich, it's brought that black market back into the main market or the formal market, and you can now earn royalties off it. So that's the first thing, is effectively the royalty streams have grown at a higher than market rate because of streaming. And the second thing is the discovery of songs has changed because of the penetration of streaming, you know, YouTube, Spotify, iTunes and the like, where in the old days, production studios would blast out distribution onto radio and TV and everything and MTV, and we'd hear the latest pop song shoved down our throats. Now what's happening is algorithms are deciding the songs that we like. And in fact, what we're getting is we're getting a second wind in older songs rising up to the top of streaming charts, because we actually don't care what the latest song is. We're interested in songs we like. And that's quite a change. So the older catalogs, and you touched on Bowie, actually becoming more attractive.
Yeah, I mean,
they're good songs. We like them, and we keep listening to them.
In the olden days, I would go and haul out my vinyl or my CD of a Bowie and play it, and I still might do that. But truthfully, I can also now stream it. And of course, they don't earn any royalties further beyond my buying that CD or vinyl. But now when I stream it, and they don't earn much. I mean, it's fractions of a cent. But it's, you know, that's just me. We look at Spotify, we look at Amazon, we look at Apple and the other big streamers. I mean, there are probably a billion people plus streaming.
Certainly, it's a vast, a large and growing body of the world that's streaming. And it becomes even bigger if you consider that YouTube is effectively streaming.
Oh, well, yeah.
And that's a monster all on its own. So it's a large and growing market. And then here's an interesting stat. If you go and have a look at the most streamed songs during the pandemic and hard lockdown periods on Spotify, on iTunes, on YouTube, YouTube less so, because YouTube, there is marketing involved. It's not just pure algorithm. But most of the top stream songs weren't new. They were all old. So it's changed the value in these catalogs. And then there's something that's also quite subtle. The formalization of this market, where we've got some big, big players with deep pockets, they're working out the value of placements of these songs. So they're putting them into Stranger Things and Netflix. They're putting them into Disney movies and putting them and that elevates the songs into public consciousness. And then you get a knock-on effect where these songs get found on Spotify and iTunes and YouTube and streamed even more.
Yeah.
And
Kate Bush suddenly got all famous again, and I couldn't work out why. And she was in the, some, I think it was the Stranger Things. And there's a Hypnosis, song fund on the LSE. Code is song, S-O-N-G, if folks are interested. But I got a quick last question, changing tack with you, Keith. Nice little deal from Santovi yesterday.
Absolutely. So it's a small percentage, about 4% of market cap. Mm-hmm. Glenn Gerber, the CEO, structured it with a back end of profit warranties on a pretty low multiple. In fact, it's a multiple in line with Santova. But importantly, it opens up a new territory, which is the USA. That is very high barriers to entry because there's a huge amount of licenses that are involved with having logistics services in the States. And it does so on a low multiple with huge amounts of optionality. I mean, there's already conversations happening elsewhere. There's a lot that can be leveraged out of this deal, but yet they're not betting the house on it. And it's structured, like I said, with a back end of proper warranties. So it's if it goes bad, you won't pay for it going bad.
Yeah.
But if it goes well, you'll get a significant amount of upside.
Yeah, those warranties. I like those ideas. I think there are a lot of JSE-listed companies that wish they'd had some profit warranties in place. Keith McLachlan, Integral Asset Management, appreciate the early morning.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor, and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
So a bunch of investors woke up Wednesday morning, those who were the smart ones who were holding Thungela, and they're smart because you've made a really, really good return, to see the stock down some 15%, and folks were quite freaked about it. And quite simply, it was the dividend. So Tuesday was LDT, last day to trade. If you were holding Thungela at the close on Tuesday, you were eligible for the dividend. When you bought it, didn't matter, and you could have sold it first thing Wednesday morning. As long as you were holding at the close on Tuesday, you got the 60 Rand dividend. And then Thungela effectively closed the day down 58 Rand and 58 cents. So as a shareholder, you were actually slightly ahead. The stock was down 58 Rand and change, but you had got 60 Rand in dividends. So net-net, you were a Rand and some change ahead. In other words, the dividend will fall. The share will fall on the day after the dividend. That is how that process works. That's what stocks do. Usually, however, the dividends are significantly smaller. In Thungela's case, it was quite giant. And that's really lekker. You've now got 60 bucks in your pocket. You can go spend it any way you want. You can draw it out. You can put it into Thungela. You could put it into anything else you want. But there is a catch, and the catch is not insignificant. That 60 Rand dividend gets taxed. Dividend withholding tax, 20%. You didn't get 60 Rand in your account. You get 48 Rand. So actually, you end up 10 bucks behind. And that's the problem. I love dividends. I really do. But that tax hit is a hard. So, you know, you should have got 60. You got 48 and SARS got the other 12 Rand. The stock was down 58. So you're a little bit behind the curve. And if we look at the other tax out there, which is CGT, maximum CGT, if you are in that high 1.6 million 45% tax bracket, your capital gains tax is going to be at max 18%, and you get a 40,000 exclusion per year. So dividends are great, but that tax component of them, I mean, it's the good, it's the ugly, and that tax really, really is the ugly. That's it for today. We were chatting with Alan Robin Cabela from Perpetua Investment Managers yesterday. Wilson Bailey exiting Australia, basically saying no more financial support. Now, they actually need, I think it's Victoria State in the US to sign, sorry, in Australia to sign off on it. But we asked you, what was your preferred construction stock? Lenwaba quite liked Wilson Bailey. He said, if you strip out the Australia completely and mark that to zero, you've got a company in a PE of around 5. You folks did not agree. Over half of you said, nope, you want nothing to do with construction, not any construction. A quarter of you were liking Avenge. Marion Roberts got just over a tenth of a percent, and Wilson Bailey got almost no love whatsoever. The returns on these, the 20-year returns, Wilson Bailey's up about tenfold over 20 years. Murray's is up about 13%, not annualized, 13%, and Avenge is down about 90%. It's been a horror investment. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, Tetsa, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. We're going to be talking the Old Mutual BEE scheme.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.